The Cavs continue their first-round playoff dominance of Boston and look all but destined for a second-round matchup with the Chicago Bulls. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. This is After the Score.
Welcome to After the Score, 89.7's weekly look at sports. This week we'll talk with a writer for Massive Report about the Columbus Crew and why they might be back in the playoffs this season.
And we'll talk to the winner of the 2014 Fastest Student Competition, how he went from a halftime competition at the 2014 spring game to a spot on the Ohio State track and field team.
But first, the Cleveland Cavaliers' return to the playoffs is going just about as well as the team could expect. The Cavs beat Boston on a Thursday night, 103-95, to take a 3-0 lead in the series. LeBron James pumped in 31 points in the victory. Here now for more is Zach Meisel from Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Zach, I know that everyone thought the Cavs would win this series going in, just about everyone anyway, but are you surprised at how they've really dominated Boston?
Not surprised that the Celtics have played them close in the first half, first three quarters of each game. You know, they've had decent leads in each game, and I think it's a good test for the Cavs because the Celtics are so young and inexperienced. They're that kind of prototypical scrappy underdog, and I think it's a really good team to play in the first round to help prepare you for later rounds, especially when you have guys like Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, key pieces who have never played in the postseason. So it's a good test. And the Cavs are coming out well because they're playing their best basketball late in the game.
You mentioned Kevin Love. This is his first year with the Cavs coming over from Minnesota. He hit two clutch three-pointers in the fourth quarter last night. And what does that mean for Kevin Love? He struggled much of the season. I think it's fair to say he hasn't lived up to expectations, but he certainly did on Thursday night.
Yeah, and they're going to need that. I mean, think about a late-game situation with a close score, LeBron James handling the basketball, and you have Kevin Love in one corner, you have J.R. Smith in another, you have Kyrie Irving at the top of the key, and you've got a rebounder down low, be it Timofey Mozgov, Tristan Thompson. I mean, that's really, really hard to defend. And so I think Kevin Love really takes offensively this team to another level if he is a threat from the outside and or even down low on the block. So he has they've struggled to find ways to fit him in, and his numbers haven't been what they were in Minnesota, and they weren't going to be because he was the center of attention with the Timberwolves. He's pretty much the third cog on the offense with the Cavs, and it's similar to what Chris Bosh went through in Miami, but I don't think it matters as much in the playoffs, and you're not going to have all the media attention and everyone saying, what's wrong with Kevin Love? Why can't he fit in? Why aren't his numbers big? If he hits shots like he did in Game 3, two big threes in the fourth quarter, that's not going to matter. It's really just about winning and everyone doing their part. So I think he's starting to realize that. And this is, again, the first time that these guys have gone through a playoffs together. And it's interesting to watch them evolve and see, you know, what lineups are they going to go with late in the game and how are they going to attack defenses. And I think they're figuring all that out right now.
Mm-hmm. Getting back to the Cavs' best player, LeBron James, he had 31 on Thursday. Does he need that kind of output for the Cavs to win the NBA title, or can he be a little more of a role player like he was this season for the first time with the Cavs?
I think it depends. I think it depends on matchups. I think it depends on the thing that makes LeBron so great is he can fit into whatever you need him to do. So if Kyrie Irving had a couple of games this season when he had 55 or more points, and LeBron doesn't need to be the main spotlight. If one of his teammates is going to catch fire and have a great game, LeBron's going to do everything he can to get that person the ball. So I think, you know, in the Celtics series, it's been good for him to take charge in the fourth quarter. And I think him and Kyrie Irving have combined for, they've had an influence on every single point the Cavs have scored in the fourth quarter of the last two games. And I think that's going to happen. LeBron's going to leave his print on everything the Cavs do late in the game because he's been there and he knows what it takes to really seal the deal in the fourth quarter of a playoff game. So that's something he's probably teaching his teammates as they go along, and you would hope by the second round or the third round, if they make it that far, some of these other guys will have some playoff wins under their belt and they'll know what to do late in the game too. So it's really just about leading by example at this point. I don't think he needs to score 30 points every game, but if that's what it requires to win, Of course, he can do that.
Mm-hmm. As good as the Cavs have been, so have the Chicago Bulls. They're up 3-0 in their first round series. The Bulls and the Cavs look all but determined to play in the second round. Should Cavs fans be worried watching this Bulls team?
Yeah, I don't know about worried. I do think it's going to be the Cavs are probably going to beat the Celtics in 4 games, 5 tops. That's not going to happen against Chicago. And the Bulls have more size, they have more athleticism, and if Derrick Rose is Derrick Rose, and he was Derrick Rose in Game 3 in Milwaukee, then it adds another element to what Chicago can do offensively. And I think Kyrie Irving and J.R. Smith are probably not the best defensive backcourt, and they're going to have their hands full. And then Jimmy Butler is another piece, to a guy who's really coming into his own. And they have size up front, of course, with Joakim Noah and Pau Gasol. I mean, it's a really good matchup. And I think the Cavs are probably favored just based on talent alone. And again, we talked about Kevin Love and what he brings. He'll be instrumental in that series. But it's not going to be a cakewalk. And I think that's why it's good for the Cavs to play the Celtics in the first round, a team that's going to test them, that's going to give them a battle. And it should be fun to watch, that's for sure.
The rest of the Eastern Conference playoffs are pretty much playing out as we thought. The Hawks are up 2-0 on the Brooklyn Nets. Wizards up 2-0 over Toronto. Are the Cavs the front runner to win it in the East, do you think? Or is that the Bulls, or is it the Hawks?
It's so funny because the Hawks have just been under the radar, even though they had the best record in the East and it wasn't close. But just because of the way the Cavs, I mean, the Cavs were 19-20 at one point, and for them to storm back and finish with the number 2 seed, it's impressive. And they played the best basketball of anyone in the NBA over the last couple of months. But the Hawks have just, I don't know if they haven't gotten respect or they've just flown under the radar or what, but it's pretty incredible. And I think that, I mean, they don't have any superstars. They're almost like the Spurs of the East in that they really are just, some of their parts is better than the whole. We hear that adage all the time in sports, and it really plays true for them. That's not going to be an easy series either. I think Chicago will be tough because they're playoff tested. They've been there before. They've got depth, and they've got a lot of guys who know what they're doing come April, May, and June. But the Hawks are going to be tough too. That's a team that is pretty relentless offensively. They can shoot the basketball, and they play pretty good defense. So, and the Cavs had trouble with them in the regular season. So that's going to be interesting too. I think the Cavs are the favorite just based on talent alone. I mean, you just list names, and I think you probably have to go with LeBron James and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love over a team that, you know, it's Al Horford, Paul Millsap. I mean, they're great players, but they don't quite have the talent the Cavs do.
The Cleveland Cavaliers have a 3-0 lead over the Boston Celtics in the first round playoff series. We've been talking about that with Zach Meisel from the Cleveland Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com. Zach, thanks again.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Come on, Cavs. Gotta make it happen. Come on, Cavs. Gotta make it happen with your fast break action. Gotta make it happen. Just keep on coming on. Gotta make it happen. Come on, Cavs.
So last week's spring game, Braxton Miller and Ezekiel Elliott appear to have tied in the fastest student race they have at halftime of the spring game. Last year, a little different situation.
Yeah, Malcolm Branson was just a normal student at Ohio State, a criminology major, and didn't play any varsity sports. And he heard about the fastest student competition, and he decided to compete in it.
So Malcolm Branson, this is a little simplistic probably, but you basically walked off the street and tried out, right? That's how it got started?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, it all started with that fastest student race, but yeah.
So how did it come about? Tell me how you just heard about it on campus and you just showed up at the Woody Hayes Center?
Well, initially I was in class, and it was funny because, like, both of my friends had got a hold of me at the same time. One got a hold of me on Twitter, and the other had just texted me, like, literally right as I saw it. And then I was really hesitant about it at first because I didn't want to go there and not do well. But, I mean, I kind of thought I would do well, honestly.
Well, your friends thought you'd do well enough that they texted you and tweeted you, so they knew that you were fast enough to compete in this 40-yard dash.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I would do well. It's just, you know, just something that at first I was nervous about, but then, you know, I just got there and do the things that I normally practice when I run the 40, because I practiced running the 40, like, long before that. I've just always done that.
You weren't on any sports teams at OSU before that. You were just a student.
Yes, I was.
And so you've always been fast? People knew you as a fast guy?
Yes. I didn't really get fast till college, though, in high school. I didn't get fast on my junior year in high school, so that's around when I started to peak.
Did you run track in high school?
Yes.
at Maslin, right?
Maslin Perry.
Yeah, okay.
It's right next to the Maslin Washington High School.
Okay.
So you were kind of fast, but you weren't exceptionally fast like you are now.
Yes, correct.
And so how did you make the jump from winning this student race to the track team?
Well, I was visiting my cousin in Florida, and right after my plane landed, I saw an email from Coach Rosalind Joseph, and she basically wanted to just gauge my interest in becoming a Division I athlete, and she wanted to see if I was really interested in track, and she had heard I had done it before, and she was pretty much commending me on just the race and how she thought it went, and she asked if I wanted to come try it, and I was like, absolutely.
Well, let's talk about actual race day. Well, back up for a second. There was three rounds of racing. Basically the tryouts to see who would be able to compete in the fastest student competition. You did well at that, and they invited you back to Student Appreciation Day, which was a little bit after that, but before the spring game. You competed in that and got a chance to race at Ohio State spring game. And that's kind of how the timeline of things went. Jump forward to the spring game. Once you're on the field with the likes of, you know, Dontre Wilson or Duran Grant, or I think they threw Sean Nuremberger out there, a bunch of Buckeyes that you were racing against. Talk about the first race, because I knew there was more than one. Talk about the first race that happened at halftime of the spring game.
Well, the first race, actually, it was crazy. Cause, I mean, I really don't remember it because it happened so fast.
Like 4.4 seconds or something.
Yeah,
like
that's
that.
That's why you won
it. Yeah, something like that. But I really don't remember it because it happened so fast. And then I just remember finishing, and I had to duck and dodge the media because I was coming in hot. And then, like, I didn't know if I had won or whatever, but the operations manager Fernando Lovo and somebody else came charging at me, so I was like, I must have won, but I really wasn't sure. But yeah, they pretty much tackled me just about afterwards. But that's all I remember about the first race, honestly.
So did you win, or did they declare it a tie?
They declared it a tie. When people usually watch the first one, I just tell them to watch the video. I mean, I know there was something around it, but you know, I always tell people to watch the video.
Because the video shows that.
Yeah, you just got to watch the video.
Malcolm says the video shows that he won. So what they do after the tie happened between you and, it was Duran, right?
Yeah, me and Duran. And I think it was James Clark, I believe.
Okay.
In 10-4 in high school. So.
All right, so the three of you, you guys went into a second race?
Yes.
Okay, so talk about that second race.
Now, the second race, Duran's a very big, strong, physical dude, so he got out on me. He just very big, strong guy. But I was definitely walking him down that second one, but I think by the time I actually got to him, I ran out of real estate, so he ended up getting me the second one.
So he had a better start, and you weren't able to close the gap?
Yeah.
Okay, I got you.
No shame in losing to him, certainly. So how much different is track than just regular old foot races like you were running in the shoe that day?
Oh, it's definitely not different. You know, you gotta pretty much run 4.3, 4.4 speed, but you got to hold it for 70 or 130 more meters.
And when you say 4.3, 4.4, you're talking about a 4.3-second 40-yard dash, which is really fast.
Yes.
And so you have to run that, you're saying, at it for 100 yards or for more, for 100 meters,
yeah,
or
100
more?
And 200 meters, because those are my events. So,
the 100 and 200?
Yeah, you got to hold that for a long time.
What's your 100 time now?
My 100 time, I just ran a 10.78 this past week at Virginia. I'm trying to chop it down to a 10.4.
And that's exceptionally fast for me. How does that compare in college? Are you a top level college runner? Are you kind of middle of the pack? How would you classify?
As of right now, it's middle of the pack. As of now, so that's why I'm just trying to chop it down gradually every single week. And mm-hmm. I've been doing that. You know, the week before I believe was a 10.85. So I'm definitely walking in the right direction.
I mean, you have been improving. You've only been on the track team and training with the track strength program and running and training with these guys. You're improving week after week. I guess it's kind of weird to think about. You're a fifth-year senior now. Had you started a little bit earlier in college, do you think you could have been, like, in that elite level, or is there kind of, like, a plateau for you? Or
I definitely think I could have been further down the road. I don't know how further down the road I could have been, but I definitely think I would be a consistent mid to low 10 runner.
And how many more meets are there this season where you can really grow on your skill?
I believe there are three.
Okay.
Just about three. Like, and then four, depending on if we qualify for nationals as a relay or if I qualify in an open event.
What happened between high school and college? How did you get so much faster?
You know, I just really stayed in the weight room. You know, I'm like one of the only people who get made fun of for doing legs a lot. You know, it might not really show, but I do a lot of legs and a lot of squats and all that. So I just kept doing that, and out of nowhere, we just showed up one day, and my first 40 ever was like a 4.42, and then we actually didn't think that was right. So I ran it again, and it was a 4.7. And then I told my buddy, you know, let me run one more. And then it was a 4.42 again. So I was just like, okay.
So did you have a chance to watch this year's fastest student competition, and were you thinking
yes,
to yourself?
Yes, I did. I saw it. I saw it on the internet because I was down in Virginia.
Gotcha. So were you there thinking I could beat all these guys again, or thinking you could be in this fastest student competition again?
I mean, I was just really watching it as a fan. You know, I really didn't want to get into comparing myself at the time because, you know, it was somebody else's time to shine, and I think Ezekiel Elliott won it.
It was close. I think if you check the video again, I think they announced Zeke won, but I think Braxton's foot actually hit the line before Zeke's
did. Oh, really?
There's a picture of Braxton's foot of the line about the same time Zeke's chest is in the line, but those are both incredibly fast guys.
Yeah, both of them are pretty fast.
So you obviously didn't have to race either of them last year. That might have been might have been a little bit different story. I don't really know. What kind of shape they were in at the time, but
yeah, I don't know.
Probably pretty good shape. Malcolm Branson is a senior at Ohio State. He won last year's fastest student race. He's now a member of the Ohio State track team. Malcolm, thanks for coming in.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Opened their 2015 season, and the biggest change from last season, Thomas, I suppose, is a newly branded stadium. It's now Moffray Stadium.
That's right. The naming rights to Crew Stadium, now Moffray Stadium, were sold to a Spanish insurance company, and it definitely seems a lot different for Crew fans.
And Pat, here to talk about that now is Patrick Murphy from the Crew website, MassiveReport.com. Patrick, just how different is the stadium?
There's a lot of different things they added. New food. They changed the distributor who did the food, the people who do Schmitz and some of the more local, well-known type of food are now doing the food that you'll get at the vendor stations. A bit more pricey from what I understand, but higher quality food.
More of a worldly feel there?
Yeah, you get kind of a community Columbus feel. They also do a lot of new beers. They still have your typical, draft beers, but they've also got a station for craft beers, local beers. They're really trying to do this local heritage, local feel. And then, of course, you've got the new name, which they've been trying to do since, what was Crew Stadium opened in 1999. And owner Anthony Precourt finally got done, which obviously brings in money to do more things. And things all kind of went hand in hand this season, opening up these different stations and having these new sponsors and whatnot involved.
I'm ashamed to ask this. What does Moffray mean? You said it's Spanish. Does it stand for anything?
It doesn't. It's an insurance company. It's really big in Europe, from what I understand, and their major American location is in Massachusetts. And they're trying to get into different markets, Columbus being a big insurance area with Nationwide and whatnot. I think this was a place they realized was a target area. And so it worked out well. But they are their company, Folks is in Sports, they sponsor stuff around the world. Not so much in the United States yet, but they're trying to build here. And the stadium naming rights was a big part of that.
It just seemed like with an emphasis they put on local with their food and beverage and the emphasis they've been putting on Columbus, it seemed like a strange choice for the name. But you said they're trying to shift some of their business into the United States, so the name comes first and the business is going to follow, kind of thing?
Yeah, I think you got the rebrand last year, and that was very Columbus-centric. They focused local. Some of the local players have been, like Will Trapp has been a guy who they've put out in front.
The young guy from Grove City.
Gahanna,
sorry.
Yeah, and they put him out in front. And so you've got all that. And then I think the naming rights was something they wanted to get done, for a long time. And so that was whatever partner they could get that matched the ideas that they wanted to do. The American representative at the press conference was a soccer guy, and mm-hmm. I think that was big. He understood MLS. He knew, about the Crew, Crew SC, I guess. And so, there is some connection there without it being a local sponsorship.
Getting to the actual pitch now, the Crew won they lost two of their first three games. They've been able to get at least a point in each of the last three games. You say a lot of this weird start was because of a weird schedule.
Yeah, it was kind of strange the way the league set it up. And, with weather in certain cities, they try and balance that so that you get the better, better weather games at home throughout the year. But, even with that said, you know, they played the first two weekends, one game at home – or one game on the road, then one game at home, then had a week off, an early kind of off weekend, and then, you know, the following Saturday, and then 10-day break, which just kind of disrupts the flow of things, before playing two games in 4 days. One was in Vancouver, which is all the way out on the West Coast, and then the next one on Saturday was in New England. So you're traveling across the country, and, you know, they ended up getting two draws from those two games, which they considered a success. The first game, they didn't play all their starters. They let some guys rest a little bit. And then they came back home last week and had what I think most people would consider their best performance of the season, which was a 3-0 win over Orlando City, who is an expansion team but is off to a pretty good start.
Crew SC made the playoffs last year but were eliminated fairly easily by New England.
Correct.
What are expectations for Crew SC, and what do fans kind of expect? Do they want to build on that or go even further?
Yeah, I think for frame of reference, New England ended up in the championship game and went to overtime against the LA Galaxy, who were the winners. So they lost to a good team. You know, it wasn't they got knocked out to a team that then got knocked out in the next round. Going into the playoffs, those were two of the hottest teams in the league. You know, both had one loss in like 10 games or something like that. So, you know, it was a tough series. Most of the Crew players hadn't played in the playoffs before, whereas New England had been there and had, you know, experienced what a playoff series is like. And so I think they learned a lot. I think from a team perspective, they want to continue to develop, continue to build. You know, the playoffs, I think from a fan perspective, is a minimum. You know, they want to see the team progress past where they got last year. I think people were pretty high on the team last year going to the playoffs that they could really make a run, and they were disappointed with the performances, but I think the team kind of understood what the team was going through with that and making their first playoff appearance since 2011. So, you know, it was a success, but there was some disappointment towards the end of the season, and they want to build off that this year.
In recent years, Frederico Higuain, I hope I said that name right, been worth the price of admission alone. Yeah. Is he still the best player on the team? Is he still the leader for the Crew?
He is. Saturday night was his best game possibly since he's been here. And Greg Berhalter, who has been the head coach for the last 2 years, even said that after the game, that it's probably the best game he's seen him play. With the schedule, I think, threw him off a little bit, but some games he can come across a little disengaged if he's not getting the ball as much as he normally does. The last few, he's looked like himself again. So I don't know if he's finally getting into the rhythm of the year, but he scored his first goal on a nice little kind of heel flick, had an assist. So, you know, he's kind of off and running now, but he's their playmaker. He's their creative guy. He kind of makes things go in the attacking part of the field for the team. And, yeah, he's definitely their best player.
If you had to make a prediction for the season, where do the Crew end up in their conference?
At the beginning of the season, I said, just based on what other teams had done, they would probably finish around where they did last year, which was third place. Having looked at some of the other teams now that we're a little over a month in the season, you know, they have the potential to do better than that. You know, they added a lot of depth in the offseason, and that depth was unproven to us, to fans, to, you know, even I think the coaches knew what they were getting but weren't sure how it would fit. We've seen a guy, Mohamed Saeed, who's a Swedish player, came over from the league over there, and he's filled in really well when in the center of the midfield when Will Trapp and Tony Chani have been unavailable. And that's something they didn't have last year. They lost a lot of quality when either of those guys couldn't play, and now they almost, you know, stay step for step with where they would be with their full starters in, and they've got that in several positions. So, you know, making a push late in the season could be even better than it was a year ago.
It's hard to tell with injuries, but if you had to say now, playoffs, yes or no?
I would say that they should be a playoff team.
Pat Murphy writes for the Crew website, massivereport.com. Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you guys.
So a few other things we wanted to get to this week. D'Angelo Russell, to no one's surprise, is going in the NBA draft. And Thomas, he's listed as a top five pick at this point.
Yeah, and he should be a top five pick. And that means he's going to get guaranteed money, somewhere like $3 million a year for the first 2 years.
Yeah, I always do fully support these guys who leave early, especially anyone who might come from tough circumstances or something. It makes total sense if you're going to make millions of dollars a year. Do it. You could blow out your knee tomorrow.
Exactly. Switching now to a thing that will never happen but was rumored on the internet. Paul Feinbaum reported that there's a chance that Braxton Miller could join SEC country and be the quarterback for Alabama. Do you put any stock in this, Steve?
I kind of hope he does it because it would just be terrific theater.
That would be one of the best storylines in college football for a long time to come.
No, I don't think it happens, though. What does that even mean, a chance? There's a chance the sun doesn't come up tomorrow.
If he went to Alabama, and just imagine for a second that somehow God shined a light on college football and Alabama played Ohio State in the college football playoff championship game. That would be the most fun game to ever happen in the history of all of sports.
And we end with Tim Tebow.
Tim Tebow!
Back in the NFL, for better or worse. A lot of people would say for worse, but he's back. He's with the Philadelphia Eagles. No guarantee that he makes the team. He took the veteran minimum. It's a great storyline. It's replayed on ESPN to the point of absurdity, but it's great.
Tim Tebow's a playmaker. He's a shot caller.
He's just out there having fun.
He's a straight winner. If you ask Skip Bayless, he'll tell you that Tim Tebow is one of the best quarterbacks to ever come out. He did well with Denver when he was there, and he got kind of a raw deal with Denver, in my opinion. He went out and won a playoff game against the Steelers and then was basically cut from the team for future because they didn't see a future with Tim Tebow. I think teams were hesitant to give him a chance because of his throwing motion, his release, but I don't know. If you can make things work, like if Marcus Mariota can rely on his feet in the NFL, like teams are expecting him to, I think you can give Tim Tebow a chance. Why not?
Yeah, give him a chance. He could be a two-point conversion specialist, especially with the new two-point conversion rules possibly coming in. They would favor a big running quarterback, a guy like Tim Tebow. And maybe the opposite of Tim Tebow, Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, he's back
out of rehab now.
Yeah, he's back with the Browns now. Do the Browns see Johnny Manziel as their future? I don't follow the Browns as closely as you do, Steve. Do the Browns see Johnny Manziel as their future quarterback?
I would say the Browns fans' expectations of Johnny Manziel are very, very low, but they are still talking themselves into him potentially being very good.
What's the team's expectation, though, of Johnny Manziel?
I would think that Josh McCown is the likely starter at this point, unless Manziel makes a gigantic leap from last year.
See, the thing that happened last year was that Brian Hoyer was the starter for the first, eight games of the season-ish, and everyone knew that eventually, if things went south for the Browns, Johnny Manziel would be the starter. If they plan to do the same thing with McCown and then go to Johnny Manziel down the road, things didn't go well for Johnny when he came to the game. He looked absolutely terrible in a couple of games. He came in as a starter. I think if they see a future with Johnny Manziel as the starting quarterback, I think he needs to be the day one starter. And I think you're right. I think he has a long way to go to be that day one starter.
And that will do it for this week's edition of After the Score. Until next week, you can find us on iTunes. You can also find an archive of episodes using the WOSU Public Media mobile app.
You can always follow After the Score on Twitter, @AfterTheScore. Tune in next week because we will be talking about the Cavs as they continue to push their way through the playoffs. Until next week, I'm Thomas Bradley.
And I'm Steve Brown.